Just a couple updates. I am currently writing the next book that is estimated to be released in September. It's going to have a lot of interesting concepts and everything. So it's going to teach you how to think like a watchmaker. If you want to find out more information, take a look at the link in the description. And without further ado, let's get started. Today's episode is going to ruffle some feathers. Okay. We're going to cover our watches worth the current price. So with the prices of the watches rapidly increasing nowadays, it's very tough to justify the cost. Mind you, it's coming from a watchmaker in the industry. So most luxury goods, if you really think about it, are never a necessity. Watches just happen to be one of those things you legitimately needed back in the day to tell time. Time telling was one of those things that ultimately changed the way the world operated and enabled us to travel, meet, and ultimately get in sync with our teammates, coworkers, friends, everyone around us. That's how we conquered and discovered the world, right? During war, it was amazing because you can finally coordinate with your teammates, you can coordinate with allies, etc. Now, you can Google it too if you don't believe me, but how do we go from viewing a watch as a necessity to what it currently is as luxurious and obnoxious, I guess, in some sense? You know, at the end of the day, currently watches are status symbols, right? You don't really need a watch. So when you think of watches, you think of Rolex, you think of your finance bro, etc. So it would be unfair of me to say that all watches in the world are not worth it, because there definitely are some watches that are genuinely worth the price point. So just to be blunt, when I say some, I mean probably just a handful of brands. I would venture to say that probably 98% of the brands out there are not worth it in every sense of the word. But here's what you need to pay attention to when you're buying a watch. You have to remember, the price ticket of the item itself is never the biggest bill. I'll repeat it again. The price ticket of the item is never the biggest bill. Why? The biggest issue for you, if you decide to keep the item, is the upkeep. So if you buy a Lamborghini, it's $250,000. It's $250,000. But it's not the price tag of the Lamborghini that's expensive. It is the upkeep, the oil change, the spark plugs, the tires, etc. It's the daily maintenance of the item itself. So the upkeep of watches is going to be the money sucker for you. It's going to suck you dry like Dracula on a 1,000-year abstinence on blood, etc. So you have to think of it like that. The movement inside and how serviceable it will be in the long term determines a great deal of whether or not it's worth the price point. So let me be absolutely clear, okay? No watch is ever worth the current prices of the market. You can tell time absolutely easy on your phone, okay? You don't need a watch. And mind you, again, I am a watchmaker, so I'm the one who's telling you this. I'm putting myself out of business. But the only caveat out here, is military personnel. But even then, they rely on quartz watches. And mechanical watches for them is just like an extension of the quartz watches they use during service. So actually, interestingly enough, on a side topic, your military guys love watches. I love the person. I love that they love watches. It's really cool. But they're not relying on a $5,000 automatic watch to tell time and coordinate with one another when they're on an operation. You know, most of them rely on a simple G-Shock or Swiss Army, etc., right? So unless you're military, you have no right to ever justify buying a watch over paying your rent, ever. If you do, you probably have much bigger problems than listening to me right now. So you could make the argument about dive watches and how back in the days you needed a dive watch, but even nowadays you have amazing technology that you can take with you as you dive instead of a dive watch. So now that we've ruled that out and you're clearly not military personnel and you're here just to know whether or not a watch is worth it to buy, let's go over some basics that I think you need to pay attention to. The movement inside of a watch is a huge deciding factor. So you have to think of it like this. Let's talk about the tried and true ETA, ETA, the industry standard movements that we used to use back in the days. So we still use them actually, but the tried and true EDA movement ensures long-term serviceability in the long run, because you can literally go to any country in the world, and I'm sure there's a watchmaker there that will be able to help you. If you buy a watch with an in-house movement that hasn't been around for long, and when I say long, I mean 10 plus years or more, the chances are high that not many people can help you get your watch serviced. Now, why do I bring this up? You buy a watch for $8,000, $10,000, $15,000, $20,000. And the problem with that is, if we're talking about upkeep, you're really limited to going back to the manufacturer. So when you're going back to the manufacturer, there's a monopoly because you can't really price shop. And if you bring it back to the manufacturer, you are SOL, shit out of luck. If the manufacturer says, hey, it's going to cost you $8,000 to services, what are you going to do? Only thing you can do is say yes. Because if you say no, then they're going to return your watch. They're going to return your watch to not running. And that's kind of the problem with in-house movements now. So for those of you who want to know more about why in-house movements started and how EDA started the whole in-house movement craze, I covered that a lot in the book. So just bear with me. So in the long story gist of it, EDA used to power almost every single watch brand in the world. So even Rolex used a version of ETA at one point. So when ETA and Swatch Group started to limit the parts, a lot of these brands said, oh shit, we need to do something about this. And so the in-house movement craze started. And now when we look at in-house movements, not all of them are always as reliable, because again, this is R&D, and not many companies have access to extensive R&D in terms of time frame as ETA did. And so when we look at it like that, you have in-house movements where they're not as reliable, but they look nice and flashy. But at the same time, if there's anything wrong with it, the boutiques, like the point of entry for you, so let's say you go to the boutique, the watchmaker there won't have the ability to figure out what's wrong, because most of these in-house movements, the manufacturer wants you to send it back to them so they can figure out what's failing. And so this brings up the topic of extended warranties. So now that you've looked at it, back in the days, the warranties used to really just be 2 years. Now you see these companies putting out 5 years, 8 years, 10 years. Why? Because of in-house movements. So almost like 80 to 90% of the reason why extended warranties became a thing is because they want to know what's wrong with their in-house movements, and so they can expand on that. They can figure out the problem is and create better in-house movements. So you can see the monopoly effect of how all this just strung along, right? So with the problem with in-house movements, again, is that the brands control all the parts availability and supply. Now, what's this mean? This means that the local qualified independent watchmaker will not be able to help you with your watch. Not because he isn't qualified, but because the brand isn't supplying him with a spare part. And any qualified watchmaker will bring that up as a talking point, because again, like as qualified watchmakers, and we always want to service the watches to manufacturer specifications. And so if we need to replace anything, we want to make sure we use the manufacturer parts. Of course, you can argue that, yes, the watchmaker can create these parts, can help you. But any watchmaker who's doing it legitimately and has to create these parts, it's going to be extremely costly to you. So to put things into perspective, it's like going to a hospital to get seen by an extremely well-qualified doctor, only to be denied because the necessary medicine you need isn't there, because the pharmaceutical company isn't allowing the doctor to use or prescribe their product. So spare parts issue is another reason why you have to be extremely careful. The more a company or brand holds on to its spare parts, the more likely we are to know of their future plans. What does this mean for you? That means if you ever need to service your quote-unquote new watch with the in-house movement, you get romanticized, yeah, it's amazing, etc. You got caught up in the watches and the wonders craze. Yeah, there's nowhere else you can go but back to the manufacturer in order to get it fixed. So you're probably thinking, great, my watch will be serviced the right way. But at the same time, it means that you can't price shop. It means that the brand can charge you up the ass to get it fixed. You're at the mercy of the brand. Because at the end of the day, where else are you going to go in order to get it fixed, right? So brands have effectively set in motion the exact way of how they're going to bend you over and put her up your ass without lubrication. That's not even the worst part yet. Most of the so-called watch professionals and watch experts who write these fancy articles and get invited to be cuddled, wined, and dined end up spreading the exact message that the brands are jamming down their throat. So it's tough because watch enthusiasts don't know any better and they eat that shit up like it's the first drop of water from a 20-day hike in the Sahara Desert. You know, so they're gobbling it up. They love every single fancy word they're getting hit with. And, you know, it's showing. You look at Instagram, look at Instagram and the watch community for like 5 minutes and you can already tell everyone's like lollygagging and like jerking each other, right? So as a watchmaker, I chuckle each time I see that. So I mean, I'm in the trenches, I'm in these business meetings, I'm on the bench, I'm over the counter, I'm in front of you guys, I'm in front of the brands, and most importantly, I am in front of you right now. So you're listening to me. So when I tell you the world of watchmaking has a lot more smoke screens than you think it is, trust me, there's a lot more, right? So you have, when I first started in 2015, nobody was posting on Instagram. Like there's no watchmaker posting about techniques, tips, behind the scenes, etc. And now you look at, of course it's 8 years later though, but you look at it now and you see a lot of these bloggers, jewelers, these bigger podcasts, and it's great. Like I'm glad the watch community is expanding. I'm glad. But at the same time, it's just an extension of what these brands want you to see. Either you have one that loves Rolex and then like tells you some random fact about Rolex but isn't really truly a fact, but they just think it's a fact because they've seen quote-unquote Rolexes enough. But you have other ones where they try so hard to make it sound like they don't give a shit, but you know they give a shit. I don't know, I think it's funny, but I digress. Anywho, it just boggles my mind how some people can write about all these fancy and romanticized languages of watches only to change their mind the minute the next best thing comes into play, right? So when you strip away the smokescreen of a brand and its aura, what you get left with is a really just piece of mechanical and quartz watch that tells time. So if you really think about it, are watches worth the current price? I don't know. I would venture to say no. Does this mean you shouldn't buy watches? No. If you like it, you got the disposable income, go for it. But if you really need to put it in another way, if you have the disposable income to buy a watch, go for it. But at the same time, these purchases that you make, if you have the disposable income, then you shouldn't be listening to this podcast. You shouldn't be listening to, you wouldn't be second guessing, you wouldn't be doing every single research you possibly can, because at the end of the day, you've got the disposable income to buy for. You just have to remember that the upkeep is tough, right? So what does this mean? Do your research, go out there yourself, see the watch in person. Don't listen to too much sales pitch from the associate. Their job is always to persuade you to buy something in some shape or form. So whether they hit you with the highest sales tactic of telling you their quote unquote honest opinion or tell you to stay away from exclusivity, the fact of the matter is whether or not you like it yourself. So go in there, try the watch out. If you like it, you got money in the bank for it, buy it. Just make sure you do your research again. Make sure you figure out your after sales service. Make sure you figure out how often you the upkeep of it. If you can pay that sticker, you need to understand that the price of the watch is equivalent to the brand perception and the movement inside, right? So a watch can look great but have a poor movement inside. You have to remember that. There's a lot of brands out there that use movements inside their watch that you find in a lower tier brand that uses the same movement and a fraction of the price. So I know for a fact, okay, there's a brand out there who sells their Coris watches for thousands of dollars using the same movement inside there that a Swiss army uses for only a couple hundred. So in that case, I mean, if you like the brand, you want to pay for that couple $1,000 watch, go for it. It's worth it because you like it. You know, at the end of the day, it's you like it. It's your personal taste. But if you want the same movement inside, you can also pick it up for a couple hundred, is what I'm saying. So a watch can look like shit, but have a great movement inside and be completely worth it as well. So you really have to think about it like that. If the brand image and the movement are great, then you hit the jackpot. You like it? Perfect, right? So in my opinion, that's my take on if watches are worth the current price. For those who considered this too long and didn't read, or too long or didn't listen, I don't know how you even go about saying that nowadays. But for me, I don't think the watches are currently worth the price. But if the movement is good, the brand image is good, and I like it, then yes, the watch is completely worth it to me. Okay. So don't let anyone else persuade you otherwise. Take what I say with a grain of salt. Hope you guys enjoyed this episode, and I'll talk to you soon. Before we end it, if you like what you listen to, please subscribe. Please give a follow. Let me know what you think. I would love to hear your opinions.